This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the High Yield Cash Account on public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A High Yield Cash Account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is, as we say from time to time, a global economy. The question is, how much oomph can one country really have? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, today the 18th day of August, I do believe. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Our very brief slice of the Afghanistan story today comes to us via the International Monetary Fund and the letters S, D, and R. The IMF, and yes, I know that's a lot of letters here, is scheduled to distribute more than $400 million to Afghanistan next week in the form of what are called special drawing rights, those SDRs, basically a really big line of credit. Anyway, those SDRs were approved mere weeks ago, pre-Taliban, of course, but the Biden administration has now decided it would be not good to let the Taliban have that money. This is all of a piece, of course, with the global financial story we've been telling you about Afghanistan this week. The U.S. trying to economically isolate the Taliban as best it can. But remember, China and Russia, just to name two, have decided they're still going to deal with the Taliban. Back here, there is an economic data story to be told, as there's a Delta variant-inspired sag in some of that data, specifically what is called high-frequency data, indicators of what just happened, just as in, like, yesterday, or in some cases, same day, what just happened in this economy. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman walks us through that story.
Let's start by looking at the economic impact of the rapid spread of the Delta variant. John Waldman is CEO of Homebase, which helps more than 100,000 small companies manage payroll and scheduling.
Over the last couple of weeks, we have started to see an impact from the COVID Delta variant, both a slowdown on the forward-looking work that's going to happen, that's the scheduling activity, and the timesheets activity, which is a slowdown in people working today.
And clients are saying they face some of the same obstacles as in previous COVID surges.
Concerns for their team, concerns for their customers, a slowdown in customer activity.
The slowdown extends to mid-sized and big businesses. UKG Software, which is a marketplace underwriter, tracks millions of hourly employees as they clock in and out every day. Chief Customer Officer Dave Gilbertson says work shifts have fallen over the past 4 weeks, especially in regions hit hard by COVID.
In the Southeast in particular, we saw a much bigger drop in workforce activity than other parts of the country.
Gilbertson says there is another reason fewer people have punched into work since mid-July.
There is so much built-up vacation time throughout the pandemic. People are taking vacation. That's good news.
On the employment front, the job market's also shifted into a slightly lower gear, according to job site Indeed, which is also a marketplace underwriter. But chief economist Jed Kalko says job postings are still running really high in
sectors like tech and finance, engineering and research. To me, that's a sign that there's still strong confidence in where the economy is headed longer term.
Kalko says there's also a boom in HR jobs, the folks who recruit and hire other workers. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We have talked a couple of times past week or two about China and Beijing's tightening up on some big companies and industries over there, everything from tech to education. Apps have been shut down, IPOs have been put off, and investors have gotten gun-shy. And as Marketplace's Sabri Benishaw reports, there are some indications amid all of this that the two biggest economies on the planet are disentangling themselves financially.
Investors excited about Chinese equities have had a rude awakening in the recent crackdowns over issues like antitrust, data sharing, and foreign ownership. Shirley Wu is a global investment strategist at Bank of America.
Chinese policy is becoming more of a tail risk.
A tail risk is something really terrible that probably won't happen, but could.
As of August, 16% of our investors do think that Chinese policy is the biggest tail risk over the coming year.
Granted, they were more concerned about inflation and COVID, but the risks of investing in Chinese companies is on investors' minds.
A lot of people and firms are investing in China without really understanding how China's system works.
Martin Chorzempa is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute. He says the crackdowns investors are noticing are actually pretty typical for China. Investor fears don't rise to the level of completely financially disconnecting the two economies, something referred to as decoupling. But there are bigger pressures driving a wedge between U.S. investors and Chinese firms.
There's going to have to be some degree of financial decoupling because of the disagreements that the U.S. and China have.
In a nutshell, the U.S. and China disagree over accounting standards. Chinese companies, by law, have until 2022 to comply with U.S. rules or stop listing in the U.S. Compromise does not look likely.
We have a sense of ticking time bomb.
But even beyond accounting standards, the economic and financial ties between the U.S. and China may be disentangling. That's what Cliff Kupchan argued in a recent note to clients. He's chairman of Eurasia Group.
The structure of the world now is U.S.-China bipolarity. Any bipolar system injects a big dose of decoupling.
Anything related to national security, he argues, and that includes industries like big tech and data, are going to see the most separation between the U.S. and China. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishaw for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Wednesday, soft all day, worse at the close. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Raise your hand for me, would you, if you're having a little bit of pandemic backlash right about now. We talked yesterday on the program about companies pushing back when they are going to return to their offices. Airlines are bracing for slowdowns as the Delta variant spreads. It is a lot. Almost the definition of uncertainty, really, which regular listeners to this program will know businesses enjoy not at all. For a while there, Hawaii had the highest unemployment rate in the country as tourism fell to near zero. But by this summer, things had picked up so much and so fast that the mayor of Maui actually asked for fewer tourists to come. Now, though, the state is reporting record case numbers. The governor has reimposed some indoor capacity limits. So we got Manu Powers back on the phone. She runs SeaQuest Hawaii. They do boat tours out in Kona. Manu, welcome back to the program.
Great to talk to you again, Kai.
So let's see. Here we sit in late-ish August. We spoke 8 months ago back in January. It was grim, I think is safe to say. How was your summer? Better maybe?
Starkly different, let's put it that way. Bordering on somewhat insane, as a matter of fact. I'm sure that you have all heard the stories of the increased level of tourism in Hawaii. And despite the fact that we were held at 50% and understaffed, we were still breaking sales records from February into July. And we are set to have the biggest year we've had in our 34-year history. So minimal staff, minimal capacity, minimal inventory, and yet we were blowing our sales records out of the water, pardon the pun.
Yeah, very good. All right. But tell me about this exact moment right now, because things have changed a little bit for y'all in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, tremendously. You know, I'm a business owner. I'm a small business owner. I am supposed to make the best decisions I can with the information I have in front of me to strategically and thoughtfully grow my business. that is now impossible. So we are just kind of waiting it out. It's been very difficult to go backwards, right? To see that light at the end of the tunnel so close we could reach out and touch it, and then to be hurtled back out through the entrance of the tunnel.
Those of us who are not business owners, you hear out there amongst the population great expressions of frustration that this is where we are after people have done the vaccine thing and the masking thing and the distancing thing, and now we're back in a way. Are you frustrated? Are you angry? What are you?
I'm beyond frustrated, to tell you the truth. We feel a real sense of responsibility to community. We were born and raised here. We're raising three children here. We're owning and operating a business here with, you know, close to 50 employees. We are responsible for the safety of our staff, for our children. And yet we still want to contribute financially to our community. And our hands are tied.
There was some concern, I think, when we spoke in January about whether you were even going to make it. Are you still worried about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Only because we very well could be shut down again next month, for all we know. Do we stick with the business model? Again, we're seeing record sales, but all of that could disappear again tomorrow, and we could burn through the cash reserves we've got very quickly, as we learned the hard way in 2020. I just see this very uncertain path in front of us, and that equates to great stress in the home and the marriage and the business. And, you know, luckily we are managing for the time being.
This is none of my business, but it sure seems like you and your husband have sunk everything into this business. And I can only imagine that the last year plus has been eye-opening for you, that maybe you ought to diversify a little bit.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. Yeah. That was my word of 2021, diversification.
Yeah. Right?
I was going to have a pin made and wear it all day, every day to remind myself this is a lot of eggs in one basket. So we're still looking at ways that we can do that. But it's hard to make those purchases. It's hard to invest that money when you don't know if you're going to need it to put food on the table, you know, 6 months from now.
Yeah. Manu Power, she and her husband own and operate and run and try to get by on a business called SeaQuest Hawaii, a tour boat company in Kona, out in Hawaii. Manu, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
It was really great catching up with you, Kai.
This next story comes to us from the marketplace desk of Welcome to the 21st Century. MasterCard says it's going to get rid of that magnetic stripe on the back of its cards. Transition's going to start in 2024. The stripes will be gone entirely by 2033 to be replaced by the chip and the touchless tap. And you might well be wondering right about now, as we were this morning when we asked Marketplace's Kristen Schwab to report it out, what has taken so long and why now?
Much of improving credit cards is about improving security. Like, remember those handheld machines stores used to have? They left a trail of carbon copies with a card number and signature. It turns out the technology behind swiping isn't that different. Christine Parler is a professor of finance at UC Berkeley.
The magstripe just contains that secret information, which is your card number, banking information. So a person can't see it, but a machine can see it.
And what a machine can see is easy to replicate. So credit card companies started using chips that assign a unique code to every transaction. Fraud for in-person purchases decreased. So why do stripes still exist?
The back end of credit card processing is hideously complicated.
And the expensive burden of change falls on businesses. In 2015, the credit card industry made merchants liable for fraud that happened through swipe transactions. But one big industry got an extension.
The gas industry says that to upgrade their pump payment technology, I've seen estimates anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 per pump.
Ted Rossman is an analyst at creditcards.com. He says gas stations had to move to chips by this spring. And that, plus a complex banking system, is why the U.S. lags behind some other countries in credit card technology adoption. But there's one more party credit card companies need to get on board, the user. Chris Reed is with MasterCard.
We really are creatures of habit. That is true.
Chips took a while to become the go-to option. People thought they were a little clunky and slow. Now he says chip payments make up more than 85% of in-person card transactions. Who knows how long it'll take consumers to be ready for the next big thing, biometric hand and fingerprints. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
All right, here's some more letters. MMR, Marketplace Morning Report. Check it out. Coming up.
Our landlady decided she wanted to sell.
And then what do you do? First, though, let's us do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 382 today, 1% closed at 34,960. The NASDAQ down 130 points, about 0.9%, 14,525. S&P 500 down 47 points, 1%, 4,400 on the nose. Weak all day. As I said, selling into the close as well, by the way. More than 40 million. That is the number of current, former, or prospective T-Mobile customers says were affected by a recent breach of its network. Stolen data includes the usual stuff. You know, first and last names, social security numbers, birth dates, driver's license information. No big whoop. I'm kidding. It's a big whoop. It's a very big whoop. T-Mobile shaved off 0.6% today. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year treasury note rose to 1.27%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Third-party food delivery apps, think DoorDash and Uber Eats and Grubhub, they were lifesavers in the thick of the pandemic. Great for consumers, critical for restaurants, which the ones that survived anyway, came to depend on their takeout businesses. But that survival came at a cost, really steep delivery fees that cut into already thin restaurant profits. And that is where John Sewell comes in. He runs a company called Loco Co-op out of Iowa City, Iowa. Food delivery done not cheaply, but cheap. Mr. Sewell, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you, sir.
Nice to talk to you too.
So do me a favor, would you, and tell me what problem you saw with food delivery that you're trying to fix with local co-ops?
Well, what's happened over the last years is a new service has been developed to support restaurants, and that is third-party delivery services. It allows them access so they can actually enter new markets and deliver their food to customers. It's a very good concept, but the problem is that it's basically been invented by venture capital-backed tech firms, principally in Silicon Valley and Chicago, who are charging rates that are just unsustainable for restaurants to, you know, keep their doors open.
So you, being a guy who we should say runs a pizza and calzone shop in Iowa, you saw this and you said, I'm going to fix it. What are you doing? What's your idea?
Sure. Well, before I opened a calzone restaurant, I spent 30 years as a hospital executive and used to put a lot of pretty complicated joint ventures and co-ops together amongst hospitals. Never thought I'd use any of the skills that I had accumulated. But I got about 20 restaurant owners together, and we formed our own company. And I refer to it as a co-op. It's owned by the people who utilize the services. And we were able to effectively get about a half the market share in our city and drive the cost down from about 30% to well under 10%. And at the same time, offering far better customer service.
It seems to me to be a long tail kind of thing, right? If you set aside for a minute the community minded aspect of what you're trying to do, right? Provide smaller restaurants an option that does not charge them 30% commissions. It does seem there's plenty of money to be made even at a 10% margin if you go to medium and smaller sized cities and just don't even deal with the headache of New York or Los Angeles.
Yeah, ideally, 500,000 to 700,000 population works best.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, a town like Knoxville, Tennessee, it's a perfect population. It's got a major university there. And, you know, when you find towns with universities in them, you tend to get a more interesting and eclectic mix of independent restaurants. So the other ideal thing about 500,000 to 800,000 populations is you can get your arms around all the critical, iconic, independent restaurants who you really need to get on board to do something like this. You get into New York, I have no idea how you'd even begin to do this. But I'm sure there's people in New York who can figure out how to adapt our model to something like that.
Well, maybe they'll give you a call. Let me ask you this, though, sir, and then I'll let you get back to your day. I imagine that you and the calzone shop, when you fired it up, you tried a Grubhub and you said, I'm not paying 30%, right? Is that where this came from?
We actually were using one called OrderUp, and they had a great reputation. But in 2017, Grubhub bought OrderUp, which basically gave them a monopoly in Iowa City. That's when they doubled all the commission rates and fired all the customer staff. That's what stimulated us to say, no, that doesn't work in our community. We need to have a better alternative. One of the ways I like to look at this is third-party delivery has become a critical piece of infrastructure for any food culture in any town. And it can't really reside in the hands of people who are just trying to make money off it. So in essence, what we're trying to do is turn it into a public utility.
John Sewell, he co-founded and now runs a food delivery co-op called Loco. Mr. Sewell, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Hey, it was fun. Thanks a lot.
Residential housing starts, that is the number of new homes starting to be built, just like it sounds, fell to a three-month low in July, so said the Census Bureau this morning. We've talked about the housing shortage a lot on the program. It's expensive to build them, what with the cost of construction materials being what it is, and as a result, it's expensive to buy them or to rent them, which has some very real downstream implications for people out there just looking for places to live. And so we come to today's installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
My name is Sandy Lewis, and I just moved from Northwest Arkansas, Springdale, Arkansas, to be specific, and am now staying with my daughter and her family in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We were living in this house in Springdale, Arkansas for 21 years. And with the hot real estate market, our landlady decided she wanted to sell. She showed the house and she had a buyer. And then she sent us a letter saying we had to be out in 30 days. We were a family of five adults and two dogs. We're all in a fixed income. My husband lost his pension. He worked with Pan American World Airways for 32 years. And then my two adult children are on disability. So we started looking at purchase prices and felt we couldn't afford it. And we started looking at rentals and were shocked that rentals were so high. What's happening in our area, from what I understand from the realtors, is people are coming in from California and Texas and paying cash for these houses. Not only are the houses priced so high, the rentals are too. And we just could not find a rental that we could afford. It was the generosity of friends and family, a couple of people I don't even know that donated, that made us able to make the trip over here to South Carolina to my daughters. So that's how we got here. My belongings are in storage in Northwest Arkansas. We couldn't afford to bring everything with us. It's expensive to make a long-distance move like that. And until we are able to get a place of our own, that's what we had to do. We sent so much to Goodwill, downsized, and I worry about our, what I worry about most, I think, are the family photos that I should have brought with me that I left in the storage locker. Because I don't know what the heat is going to do to something like that. And then at some point, we will have to go back and bring everything with us, but that's very costly. So I don't know if or when that will happen. And I don't know where we're going to end up. It's hard to make a change in your life after all that time.
Sandy Lewis, out of Conway, South Carolina. If you've got a story about looking for or finding a home in this economy, you can tell us about it at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which, on behalf of everybody, I implore you, do not do this. Saw this at Business Insider today. Reports by Costco shoppers that some stores are out of toilet paper and others are limiting how much TP you can buy. Anecdotal, perhaps, but seriously, can we just not with this again, please? All right, away we go, but here is your moment of economic context. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the minutes of the most recent Federal Reserve meeting, that would be July's, those minutes came out today. And just because you're going to be hearing about it a lot, it looks like the central bank is thinking about stopping or slowing, really, its big bond buying program much sooner than everybody had been thinking. The word you are going to hear about this, by the way, is taper. So now you know. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Drew Jostad, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Leanna Squillace, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.